This is Word of Mouth on New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Here's one word for the food trends of 2011, bipolar. In 2011, Domino's introduced cheesy stuffed bread, while some districts removed sugary sodas from school cafeterias. Vegan was big, so was butter-drenched southern cooking. Farmers' markets had a resurgence, so did beer, burgers, and pasta. There was much hand-wringing over America's obesity epidemic, and Congress passed an agriculture bill that declared the tomato paste on pizza a vegetable. For foodies, the antidote to the nation's bifurcated food culture is just to make better food. For that, we have the beautiful possibilities presented in a great cookbook. J.M. Hirsch is food editor for the Associated Press and author of the High Flavor, Low Labor cookbook. He's also a prolific blogger and is with us to tick through some of the year's most giftable cookbooks, along with a few other food trends of 2011. Great to see you back.
Thank you so much.
I noticed a number of lists of the best food books of 2011. Is cookbook now a quaint, outdated term?
I think that's part of the whole, kind of pretentiousness of the food movement. Because one of the other things that the special foodies have objected to is the use of the word foodies.
No.
You're supposed to call them culinarians
or
gourmets. Yes. Yeah. You know what? I'm going to call them foodies until I'm blue in the face. I'm sorry. It's just far too pretentious for me.
Well, what are some of the trends that you saw in cookbooks, especially this year?
In cookbooks. Well, one of the interesting things is I think publishers have finally woken up to the fact that there is this thing called the internet and ebooks.
I've heard about it, and it's
funny because the old school publishing world really is stuck in its ways in many areas. But one of the things they've figured out is that people will spend money if they feel that they're getting a value for it. Mm-hmm. And so this year we've seen a glut of really heavy duty, beautiful hardcover cookbooks, and these aren't just hardcover cookbooks. These aren't just coffee table cookbooks. These remind me of textbooks almost. I mean, if you look at this one by Jacques Pepin, Essential mm-hmm. Pepin, I mean, the cover is padded. I mean, it's practically a pillow.
Oh, my goodness.
And most of them, have these just beautiful photography, these real sturdy bindings. Again, it's something you almost expect it to be a physics textbook. They're so weighty and just hardy books. And so that's really an interesting thing. And the publishers are doing this across the publishing world. It's not just cookbooks. And they're finding that people are responding to this and buying it because now they have to compete against ebooks. And so this is something new that they're trying.
So people actually do use them for cookbooks. What are some of your favorites of these big, hefty books?
Well, Hugh Aikson's A New Turn in the South. I mean, he's getting attention all over the place. And he has taken – he's a Canadian, actually, who is transplanted to Georgia. And he's just revolutionizing Southern cooking, a really fresh take on it. And he's just put together a beautiful book. And Allegra McEvity's Bought, Borrowed, and Stolen. It's kind of one part travelogue, one part cookbook, and it's her explorations of the world of food, and it's just a heavy-duty, massive book that just takes in a global cuisine. It's just a neat approach to cooking.
Do you have a favorite for, the most beautiful cookbook?
The most beautiful cookbook. Todd English, his book, Cooking in Everyday English, mm-hmm. is, of course, a very famous restaurateur, and his book is just so beautiful and so simple. Each recipe is a photograph, and the ingredients are represented by photographs within
them. I see that. I'm looking at the book. You've got your little spice pots. You can actually see
exactly
what they look like.
I mean, it's absolutely beautiful. He really brings you into the recipe visibly and involves you in what he's doing. And they're all yet very simple recipes.
Another trend that you write about, chefs cook at home. What's behind this?
Yeah, I think restaurant chefs in particular have finally realized, in part because of the economy has forced them to, that the high-end cookbooks of, go home and make seafoam and go home and get out your truffle oil and all that, it's just not working. The other thing, and it's not just the economy, it's just people just don't have the time to do high-end cooking at home. And so, but they don't want to lose their segment of the cookbook market. So these chefs have turned around and started writing cookbooks about how they cook at home, because apparently they don't do their restaurant food at home either. Mm-hmm. So why would they expect us to do it? Mario Batali has one, his Simple Family Meals. John Besh from New Orleans has one, his My Family Table. Then there's Todd English's Cooking in Everyday English. And even Jean-Georges Von Richten, who won last year's Beard Award for his restaurant in New York, ABC Kitchen, Home Cooking with Jean-Georges. Of all of the ones I've mentioned, his is perhaps the most aspirational of the bunch. I don't cook like he does at home, But that's okay. It's still, it's a lot toned down from the restaurant food.
Well, I know this is a big area of great of interest for you. I mean, your high flavor, low labor cookbook is this, you know, in an age when food TV, this kind of passive form of participating in culinary culture, I'll say, I think there's a desire for people to know how to actually make better food in a practical way.
You know, and the Food Network realized that, and that's why they launched the Cooking Channel, mm-hmm. because so many people they enjoyed food entertainment, such as the reality shows and the competition shows, but they really wanted that basic knowledge. They want often called the behind the stove television shows again, mm-hmm. where you actually see somebody making something and telling you how to do it. And that's why food and cookbooks in particular and food magazines are one of the few bright spots in the publishing industry that are still selling, because as people have pulled back in terms of spending at restaurants mm-hmm. and so forth, they've come back to the kitchen and they're realizing once they're back there that they actually don't know what to do when they get there. A lot of us have lost that knowledge. And so they're reaching for these cookbooks and magazines to try to learn that. And so that's why the Cooking Channel was born, to kind of bring back that sort of programming to television. And that's why so many cookbooks are coming out, and that's why we know how Mario Batali cooks at home now.
That's right. Dame Hirsch is with us to talk about some of the best and worst cookbook trends of 2011. He's food editor for the Associated Press and author of the Lunchbox Blues and Off the Beaten Aisle blogs, which I want to talk about because I actually saw you in the Behind the Stove moment. You were with Martha Stewart about your Lunchbox Blues, which, of course, word of mouth covered first. But, you know, there's this kind of idea of, you know, the response to, you know, the beaten aisle, your blog about incorporating supermarket items that like jicama and lemongrass, not your common items, into food. What is the response? Are people being more adventurous, or are they pulling back in this economy that generally has them more frightened?
You know, they're pulling back, but at the same time that they're pulling back, they're willing to explore new flavors, new ingredients. Because when we pull back, we stop going to restaurants. But we still have to go to the grocery store, and we're still reading all of these books and seeing it on television. And, you know, Top Chef and the next Food Network star and all these are introducing Americans to so many new ingredients that they've never tried before. And when they see it on TV, they want to bring it home. And that's kind of a safe environment to kind of play around with it. And just the response has been phenomenal, that, you know, people really want to get in the kitchen and start playing with it. And the beauty of it is that most of these unusual ingredients are in the international aisle of the grocery store, and that also tends to mean that they're cheap. Yeah. I mean, you can buy a bottle of sriracha or sambal or Thai red curry paste for a buck or two, and then you can do so many different things with that. And people are willing to explore with that because there's not a whole lot of risk.
Well, back to the great cookbooks of 2011, what would be a wonderful gift, or what would be your absolute favorites?
My absolute favorite, you know, my absolute favorite probably is the Cooking in Everyday English. Mm-hmm. I really love that. And I will tell you, I've never eaten at one of Todd's restaurants, but I've just really been mesmerized by this cookbook. It's just beautifully done, and the recipes are so simple. I made a butternut squash macaroni and cheese a couple of weeks ago with my 7-year-old in mind, and it was delicious. It was really good. So that is probably my hands-down favorite cookbook. It's very approachable, very beautiful.
I've got my eye on your Cook's Illustrated.
Yeah, the Cook's Illustrated. They come out with a new version of this book every few years, and this is the latest one, the Cook's Illustrated Cookbook. It's got 2,000 recipes in it. And it is just so comprehensive. You can learn absolutely anything you need to cook. And the beauty of their books and all of their recipes is that they have been exhaustively tested. So you know you can go into it and get pretty good results whether you know what you're doing or not. And so I really like their books. And this is a beautiful, comprehensive one that if you need to have one basic cookbook, that's a great one. If you like more classic cooking, and it's not just French, but if you like more classical cooking, Jacques Pepin's Essential Pepin is also a very nice book, a very comprehensive book. And now, if you're willing to go new media, and you're willing to get away from the traditional cookbook, Dory Greenspan has an ebook out. And it's, to be honest, it's the first ebook I've seen that is worthy of being an ebook.
Really?
And most ebooks I've just not been impressed by. Publishers clearly are just taking the text and uh-huh. flowing it into an app and throwing it on the web. But hers embeds video and different ways of interacting with the recipe and playing out the video. And it's called Baking with Dory. It's $7.99, and it is so well done. You watch Dory bake cookies and cakes and everything from beginning to end. You can pause it. You can work with the app. You can create your shopping list. You can have timers on it. It's just so immersive that you forget you're the one doing the baking and that it's not her. I made the chocolate chip cookies with my son the other day, and it was great. He loved the experience of watching and cooking at the same time.
That's Baking with Dory. How about some cookbook trends you wish would go away?
Oh, gosh. Okay. I've decided that in 2011, I was the last American to still eat gluten. There are a small number of Americans who suffer from a very serious illness of celiac disease, right, for whom this wheat protein called gluten can be a very serious thing. And I'm so glad that there are products and cookbooks and magazines out there to help them deal with this. However, it's a small fraction of the American population. When you walk down into the grocery store now, you see hundreds of products labeled gluten-free, and it's getting a little bit crazy, frankly. And there are just so many cookbooks, so many magazines, and so many products. It's like, really? Are there that many people? And I think it's become kind of like the low-carb thing for the moment, and I'm really quite eager for that one to go away.
Okay. Any others?
Cocktail books. You know, I am a big believer in the power of alcohol to make me sexier, smarter, and a better parent. However, really, do we need that many thousands of cocktail recipes released every year? I feel like every other week I'm getting a new cocktail recipe book, and it's kind of like, I don't know. I like a good cocktail. I just can't get that excited by book after book after book of them.
Okay.
Butchering is the other one. When was the last time you butchered a whole chicken? A lamb, a cow, pig, any of these things? And yet, you know, we have all of these books coming out, you know, butchering from head to toe, eat the animal from snout to tail. It's like, really? Who is doing this other than a butcher? And if I wanted to be a butcher, I'd go be a butcher. I want to just have dinner. And finally, memoirs. I am so tired of food memoirs because invariably they are about a woman who has been dumped and she heals her wounds by going off into the Italian countryside by buying a decrepit home and the you know, quirky locals show her how to heal her wounds with the power of wonderful food, and I am just so done with that.
Okay, we're going to take that home butchering table that we were thinking of you off the list, as well as the memoir about the woman in Italy learning life again through food. J.M. Hirsch, thanks so much.
Thank you.
J.M. Hirsch, food editor for the Associated Press and author of the High Flavor, Low Labor Cookbook. There are links to his website where you'll find his Lunchbox Blues and Off the Beaten Aisle blogs at wordofmouthradio.org. You can also follow Our Crumbs on Facebook and on Twitter. Coming up, a blacksmith slows down to keep up with the competition when word of mouth continues.
I'm fading. I don't stand a chance.